Hey everybody, welcome to Two Non-Doctors. I'm Liz Mealy.
And I'm Maria Shahada. We are stand-up comedians.
Stand-up comedians that are currently jobless because of the coronavirus.
We're finally going to be the doctors our mothers wanted us to be.
Is there anything that we don't know?
A lot, actually. We have a lot of questions. We have a lot of answers.
All of them wrong.
But we do have access to...
Google.
And a vet.
Oh yeah, my mom's a vet. She knows some stuff. We have to do this.
So every once in a while, we're going to invite her on. No, we don't. We're going to actually use this. Welcome to Two Non-Doctors.
Hi, welcome to Two Non-Doctors. I'm Liz Mealy.
I'm Maria Shahada.
You put the tea to your mouth right when I start.
It was like
amateur
one of those things.
Moves.
It was one of those things that I had in my head to do. I was like, when I'm done talking, I'm going to take a sip. And then you went, hi. And I was like, uh-oh.
But you said ready. And then as I'm talking, I just see the tea come up. And I'm just like, yo, that's not, maybe if it was a cold beverage, but you're going to slam a hot beverage right before you say your name.
I know, because especially because I have to slurp it. I have to be like.
Ha, I'm a rich
so how does your, how does your, how do your parents drink? My dad drinks coffee like this. He goes. It's such a fucking misophonia nightmare. Oh, like he
sounds like he's out of like a 1988 Coke commercial.
Yeah, like you think it's an exaggeration, but they like that's actually how my dad drinks.
How does that even happen? How does that happen and how does that not get corrected?
Well, who's going to correct him? He's 77.
Well, that's what I'm saying is how did this not get corrected at 15?
I don't know. His mom had like 70 children. She had so many kids. She wasn't worried about how somebody sips their coffee. She's just happy she had coffee to give them.
Oh, I just remember my mom sitting at the kitchen table as a kid with a cup of coffee that is the equivalent of like two bowls of soup. It just became funnier and funnier. Like this is like what a regular size mug. Her mugs became hilarious, funny gift mugs became her serious mug that she would drink coffee out of.
She's like, I'm not even fucking around anymore. This is how it is, kids.
I was just like, is this in lieu of heroin or paired with heroin? Like this is a lot.
I don't like, yeah, five kids, you could forgive it a little bit, I think.
Oh yeah, no, I don't blame my mom for anything. Everything she did was for survival and I'm proud of her and she did it. Good job, mom.
I
was gonna say any shout outs.
Yeah, you don't shout out? Is it just me just shouting out from London? Just shout out to the plant. Shout out to my new curtains.
What are you shouting out? I don't know.
I wanted to shout out the primer I've used because it's...
Oh, yeah. It's, shout out your primer.
It looks like I'm wearing a filter. Like, this looks filtered, but it's not. No. This is what's it called? Pearl primer or something. What's it called? It's by...
Professional.
Professional. It seems like we're being paid for this. And we're not.
No.
I'm so happy with how my face looks. I'm just going to give them the...
Yeah, no. I think at some point you just have to let people know that they could be saved by a product. No, but like, we did this podcast a couple weeks ago. And I was like, why do you fucking look like a 1960s movie star where they would put like those kind of filters over the screen to make
I know, I look like I've got like glamour shots. Do you remember glamour shots?
Remember,
did you have
that? I've been trying to get more glamour shots from JCPenney's. They were the best ones.
Yeah. Yeah. What was I doing? I think I had like, I had my hand on my chin, but my hair was straightened. Like it was straightened by a white girl. So it was like really poorly done. And like, I had my denim jacket, like collar up.
Yes.
it was so like soft, like filtered.
I have to find mine because I think you would appreciate it because it was like, I think I was 14. It was basically my parents went away and me and my sister were watching my brothers and they were like, go to JCPenney's and get family photos. And so you shouldn't let kids be in charge of other kids because our pictures are just like, like we're all teenagers. And then we let, like my mom, my mom let us do funny pictures. And of course, those are the ones I cared about. But this is from that JCPenney's. We all had a dress really nice. And so I told my brothers, if they smile, we'll do a funny one. And so it's literally Sam doing cross eyes and Greg attacking him. It's like my favorite photo. And that's from like when my parents left, gave us money to take pictures. And then my dad was like,
this is what you got. This is what you like, talk to the photographer, you know, it's like, it's their job.
I love those pictures. That's the funny thing is like, we became comics and all that crap and you had to get like headshots and stuff. And you're always just like,
do you still have your first headshots?
Not only do I still have them, I have a shit ton of them because we all know somebody was like, get headshots and then get 50,000 of them.
Yeah, you have a bunch of printed ones because you're like, yeah, you're going to send them out so much for all the roles you were going to be asked to do.
Yeah, for like the roles you're going to be asked to do. And then like, I think maybe 4 people in the course of almost 19 years have asked for a signed headshot. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, but I had to Google
the
myself.
The comedy clubs that are going to put me on their wall.
Yes, exactly.
I just started posting my own fucking.
I gave it to my mom. I did not know what to do with them after a while.
I was like, I don't want these.
Yeah, I was like, oof. And of course, were yours black and white? Your first ones?
Yeah. You got to be black and white.
Yeah. That's how you knew you were professional because you were in the 20s. I had to Google myself because I was looking for a certain podcast that I was on.
Yeah.
And I was flipping through the pages. And then, you know, you get curious, you go to images, you're like, what's the first picture to come up? And it's not the first picture, but like somewhere on the side is my first ever headshot. And I'm like, why is that on there? Like black and white, I'm 18 years old. And I was like, oh, the internet is
evil.
I want
to look it up. Can I find it right now if I wanted to find it?
I think you could.
Oh my God, you're so young.
I was 18, I wore a bandana. Oh, what is it with covering your head, Liz? I'm like a bald guy. Like, I always have a hat or a bandana or something on. I just didn't know how to do my hair. And then, of course, dude, I have all this jewelry on. I'm wearing, like, some of those bracelets I made myself, by the way. I'm wearing, like, 5 bracelets, 3 necklaces, who knows how many rings, a bandana. Heavy.
So 90s.
Heavy eyeliner.
What year is this? Was this 99? What year is this?
No, that would be, if I'm 18, 2018 is 2004. But yes, your skin looks perfect. It looks perfect a couple weeks ago when I immediately bought that primer. Announcements?
Yeah.
Thanks to all our patrons, people that give us money. Thank you so much. We have tons of bonuses. We have, we've been having more Google guests, meaning we have more extended and full interviews for you guys. And stickers, and you can control our Googles. You can come on as a Google guest, but we have tons of stuff. Thank you for everybody that gives to our Patreon.
Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts or on YouTube. And if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be really helpful for us. It helps us get seen. You know, thanks to everyone who's left really, really lovely reviews so far. And if you could just take a few minutes out of your day to do that, that would be really helpful. And follow us on the social medias. You can follow us on Instagram at 2NonDRS and then Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at 2NonDoctors.
And I have a book coming out a month from today.
Is it coming out that soon?
Yeah, March 16th. It's called Why Cats Are Assholes.
Oh my God, that's exciting.
I know, I'm excited. I talked to my editor and it was just kind of one of those things where like, there's no book tour. There's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird to have a first book out and none of the like traditional things one does with the book. So all I'm doing is emailing famous cats to see if they want to give me a blurb for my book.
That's awesome.
That's pretty much what I've done. I have messaged so many famous cats on Instagram and like, hi, you don't know me, but I wrote a book about you. And like some of them I even mentioned in the book. So I'm just like, you're mentioned in the book. But yeah, so I'm going to get some sweet blurbs from some.
That's great.
Cats that have millions of followers. you know how you're just like, I hope this cat picks me. But yeah, comes out March 16th. Why Cats Are Assholes. You can pre-buy it now if you want. But yeah, I'll start telling the world. This is my first real announcement. My editor was like, tell podcast. And I was like, I have a podcast. I was like, I'll tell my podcast. Yeah. I have a book. You want to get into fan mail?
Yeah.
This is from Steve. He was talking about our male depression episode. Hi, Liz and Maria. While Liz was talking about the book, I don't want to talk about it. I just kept nodding and nodding. Jesus, it's like you were talking about me, Liz. I grew up with both an evil, mean, bully, sexist, misogynistic, racist stepdad and biological father. They were the kind of guys who would call a skinny 14-year-old boy a baby, or worse, even today, I think, a pussy if he didn't want to take shots of tequila even when he was 14. Shots of tequila when I was 14. Or didn't want to go hunting or kill a deer or who cried. I could go on and on. Steve basically also talks about just not understanding how he became the opposite of his evil stepfather and biological father, and how he's much more compassionate. And then, so what I found interesting, he goes, I still, however, struggle with the notion that I am not man enough for women. Indeed, it's been my experience that women themselves can perpetuate the struggle that, in my opinion, all men deal with, whether they admit it or not. And then here's a real life example. Several years ago, there was a woman I loved. She made it clear that she preferred a guy who was more manly. She was a teacher and told me a story about how she witnessed a vice principal in her school yelling at a group of boys and how much it turned her on and made him feel more attracted to her. And then Steve also talks about how his mother supported her stepfather when he was being abusive. So one of the examples is, this is sad. My stepfather was abusing me and I was crying and my mother grabbed me, shook me and screamed in my face, take it like a man, take it like a man. And it was only many years later in therapy when it finally hit me. I wasn't a man, I was a child. It's a very thoughtful and honest email, and we appreciate it, Steve. I agree that women perpetuate this stereotype of what it means to be a man and this toxic masculinity. I think both sides of it play a part in it, and mothers can support it, which is, you know, I don't want to talk about it. The book, he basically talks about how some women fight their husbands and try to kind of pull their sons back and let them have feelings and kind of push back. And some just kind of let it happen. And then clearly in your case, your mother aggressively supported it. I think we all know women perpetuated. I think, and from magazines to how we talk about men, you know, both my roommates are shorter guys. Like, I'm 5'1". I think they're all like between like 5'3" and 5'6". And I've heard them talk over and over again about how they are dismissed just because they're short guys. Or
so I think there's this fear that women have for their sons that if they're not manly, they'll be ridiculed or made fun of or cast aside or cast out. And so it's like, I'm not excusing it, but it is coming from fear of not being part of society.
I think all this comes from fear. I think you're right. I think everything kind of comes from fear. And it's yes, there is a repopulating the planet with the survivors, you know what I mean? Who's the best to survive in society, people. And that's what you kind of go towards. But this stereotype that certain men aren't man enough, that certain men aren't, there's no value in it. I mean, they do the same thing with women. I mean, like, we just didn't talk about it because, I mean, I think we could talk about for hours that, you know, the fact that our expiration date is at 29 and that, you know, we're kind of cast aside and believed that we have less value as soon as we're not.
It's like, young. It's like your family, society, everybody's like, time is running out. You have to find someone and make babies, like, make haste, go now. And then you're like, I don't need you to tell me like my timeline to my life. And then your body's like, time is running out. So it's like, yeah, even biologically you're fucked.
No, I completely agree. But like, you're right. I think women do that out of fear, and they don't want, nobody wants, you know, their kids to live a shittier life or be tormented. And you can do shitty stuff in the hopes that they have a better life and them not understand that. I don't know. I also see women, because society tells them this is the same way that men, like, they tell women what a standard of beauty is. I think they also tell women what is of value and what's going to keep them safe or protect them or what society wants. And that gets perpetuated. And it becomes both sides where you're being told as a man that you're not man enough. And I get that. I mean, the example that Steve, I will push back a little bit on the example you gave, Steve, that this woman saw a vice principal yell at boys in Japan. That's her shit. Like, I don't know what to tell you. That's
a particular type of thing.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that absolutely is a woman that came from not a great childhood.
Where
that,
abuse means love.
Yeah, like that goes right in, because we talked about what the different types of attachments in one of our episodes. So there's secure and insecure, and then with insecure, there's needy, and there's, what's the one where you push people away?
Avoidant.
So to me, her being attracted to that guy that's yelling at a bunch of kids, that's somebody that came from an abusive home and that had insecure attachment styles. That has, in my mind, nothing to do with somebody being manly enough. That has to do with unresolved trauma. But yeah, there's still, like what I was saying before, there are societal messages that you know, somebody that's big and strong can protect you. Somebody that's big and strong is going to make a kid that survives, whatever it is that's biological. I know for me, my parents are nice people. I like nice people. I'm not attracted to mean guys. It doesn't, you know what I mean? I'm not attracted to anybody that's mean. My friends aren't mean. I'm not mean. My every boyfriend in the past wasn't mean. Like that doesn't, but that's because I was raised with people that were, how they treated people were nice. I'm not going to say like everything they did was great, but like how they treated people was nice. I was sent a message that you're nice to people. So I like dudes that are nice to people. So I do think whatever you kind of have going on in your early childhood picks that out. So really what women are attracted to often has to do with who raised them. Like, and he talked about in his letter that he was raised by these kind of racist, sexist, very mean men, but he became the complete opposite, just very compassionate and sensitive and thoughtful. But there's a lot of people that are raised by mean men that just become mean men or mean women. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't exactly understand why when you have a bad example of a parent, somebody becomes the opposite. And I have tons of friends like that, where like they had really bad parents and they are the kindest, nicest people. So I don't know why some end up just perpetuating how their parents raised them and how some go off to be really kind people. But that's what you kind of have to understand with that example you gave about that woman, is she was also raised by somebody shitty and then she became attracted to shitty. Like,
yeah,
I think that's more of an example of it, but we're happy you wrote in.
Thanks for writing in.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Googles?
Yeah, I watched, my Google was, is Bob Ross considered ASMR?
Okay.
Because I watched him the other day, I was showing him to Johnny. Like when I first watched him, I might've been 3, 4. He came out in 83 until like 94. So I was young, I was like 5 or younger or something when I was watching, because I think what my babysitter did was just kind of like sat me in front of the TV and left. And so I was just stuck there with Bob Ross, but it's like all the sounds came back to me. So he has a very like soothing low voice and it's really calming. But on top of that, all the paintbrush sounds, like he has like a knife thing that he scrapes. And then there's like the brushes and he's like doing a cross, whatever he's doing. But they all have a particular sound and it just came whoosh, like rushing back to me. And I was like the sounds were very familiar. I knew it was a painting show, but I was like, oh my God, I think I've internalized this to be soothing. And that might be why like people like ASMR, I don't know.
Or why people like Bob Ross, that he is a form of ASMR. Yeah. You know what I mean? That like, they didn't even realize that because like how many people, everybody loves him, but most of my friends don't like painting or paint at all. They're just like,
no,
yeah,
but I don't know anybody's ever followed the painting.
Yeah, no, he's making you tiny trees.
I can imagine you getting high and just sinking into him. But like, yeah. But like, so I looked it up and yeah, 100%. There's article upon article about like how really? Bob Ross is a pioneer of ASMR and all that. And yeah, because like everything.
Is he still alive?
The sound of his voice. No, he died in like 95. But the sound of his voice, the way the paint sounds on the canvas, the way the paintbrush goes, the way like the different paintbrushes, the way he like, he'll make an evergreen. It'll be like, it's like all so soothing. And I was just, and I had just taken some CBD oil. So I sort of, you know, whatever, you know, the sponsor, but like, I just sort of was just sinking into this, like, I really fucking love that. Yeah. So he's, so he is considered ASMR 100%. And,
that's so crazy. He like invented something.
Yeah. I wonder if he knew what he was doing.
If he didn't know what he was doing, I wonder if the person that put him on TV just painting for hours knew. Like, because like that would be a live, that would be like a Twitch live stream thing now. Is just some guy, you know, just some guy whispering and painting. And we'd be like, why the fuck does he have millions of views?
Yeah. And it's just stuff like this. His soft voice, kind disposition and gentle painting sounds so relaxing. I fall asleep watching him. I mean, it is relaxing. I love it. So I'm sure that's affected me on some level. It must have. I don't know how, but maybe that's the next Google.
Also, like, isn't that kind of interesting for like parenting wise? Like if you notice your kid is being very calm with like these gentle sound, like when, you know, like the same way that people have sound machines to go to sleep, like it's the ocean or, you know, it's rain or whatever. Like that's gotta be, I know we did a whole episode that we barely learned anything from.
Yeah. We learned that if you blow a hair dryer, you'll get millions and millions of views.
That whole episode, we were just angry. We were like, what the fuck? What kind of views are these ASMR stars getting? This is bullshit. Why do I try? My Google, what's the fastest way to cure puffiness in the morning?
Okay. I want to know this.
Yeah. So first of all, I kind of learned some stuff. Causes of puffiness, just so you know, if you sleep too much, sleep too little, just lying down in general, sleeping on your face actually exacerbates like puffiness. Basically it's fluid retention. That's why you're puffy. So just like the act of laying down, fluids.
Okay.
Get fluidy. So sleep can cause it, and most likely that's why we're puffy in the morning. Makeup can cause it by having like a skin reaction, foods that have high sodium, and then alcohol, period, allergies, sinus infection. There's like a bunch of reasons that you would have extra fluid retention. But I'm, for the most part, why is it that I wake up and I'm like, my nose is bigger in the morning. My cheeks are bigger. And it's just like, especially with something like this, like, I'm like, can we?
When you start auditioning and stuff, you start to notice like, why do I look like this in the morning? I need like 4 hours to deflate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm just like, I've noticed like, I look at myself in the morning more than I ever do. Because I'm now putting on sunscreen every morning, I have like a whole skincare regimen. This is the most I've ever looked at myself in my life, because I have things that I do in the morning and then I have things that I do at night, and they all take like a half hour now. So I'm like putting on vitamin C. I got this like little depuffer thing. Like half of this is just to like do something. It's like, I don't even know how I feel. And then I put on sunscreen, because that was my New Year's resolution, sunscreen every day. And then there's all this stuff at night. So I think I'm just noticing more how puffy. And then I'll look at myself at like noon and I'm just like, it's like you said, like deflating. So they said you can wash your face with cold water, or like have like a cold towel, which I actually ended up doing today because I had a bunch of pimple stickers on my face and they were sticky. So I washed my face with cold water and I was like, I'm already doing my thing. You can put coffee or like a cooled off tea bag. I've seen people take coffee grounds and like spread them on their face, or you can do the same thing with tea.
Fun trick. You could take like the tea bags you've already used, freeze them, and then use them as like depuffers, like put them on your eyes in the morning.
Oh, look at your little life hacks. I like that. I've definitely heard people talk about putting tea bags like around their face or whatever, but it's supposed to stimulate your blood vessels. You can do the jade roller. I feel like everybody bought a jade roller. So you could jade roll your face a little bit. It's just about kind of getting waking up your face. Exercising helps with all this. And then they were like creams and masks and all that stuff. But I was kind of like, don't get me wrong, there's every cream in the book that tells you they're gonna depuff you. And that's why I bought this little thing for like $11 that goes around your eyes. And I keep it in the refrigerator, because they said, again, coldness helps. But I don't know. I can't see if I'm I still feel
puffy. You don't really need to do that. You could do that with cucumbers. You could freeze tea bags. You could freeze spoons and put them on your eyes in the morning. Like, you don't need to like buy something specific for it. Did I ever tell you about how, like, remember when I was staying at your place and I asked if my friend Jen could stay over, and you're like, yeah. And then like how in the morning I like woke up and she had two pillows propping herself up, and then her hair like splayed, and she looked like a Disney princess. She was just on her back. And I know that's the way you're supposed to sleep for like optimal beauty, right? Because if you sleep on your side, you're fucking up your face. If you sleep on your stomach, you're fucking up your boobs. And that's like the only way to sleep and be beautiful is to sleep on your back, but nobody actually does it. And she was actually doing it. And I was just like, what is this? I was like, wake up. What is this? She looked so perfect. It was annoying.
Did she train herself to do that?
I think she trained. Yeah. I think you have to train yourself to do that, because otherwise you're sleeping all every which way.
Which is crazy, because like last night I slept on my back, because like Pasta sleeps on me. Like, she'll cry at like 5 a.m and I just convince her to kind of like snuggle, but it's, she like makes like a nest in like my body, or she like sleeps on my stomach. So last night I was having trouble sleeping, and she slept on like blankets, pillows on my side, and then she's on my stomach. So I'm just like in this weird tomb. And like,
that's actually perfect for you to sleep on your back then.
What's really sad is, because she controls my life, if I'm too fidgety, she gets up and cries. So I don't really like, so I'm kind of like, just figure it out, Liz. But I had learned, and there's a part of me that feels influenced by the fact that they said I would be more puffy if I sleep on my face. So I was kind of like, best way to experiment is try, but I can't sleep that way. I wash my face with cold water.
I hate, I
don't feel like it did anything. I used to get up and within,
but you don't look puffy.
I feel puffy. I'm less puffy than this. Like, give it an hour and you'd be like, what? Totally different face. But I used to, like, college, early 20s, I would get up and within a half hour I'd go for a run. And I'm like, maybe I need to get back into that habit. Like, just get everything moving.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
If you sit around, like, things get creaky.
My face is getting creaky. All right. Let's get personal.
Yep.
What's a movie or show you watch repeatedly that you find comforting? Like, basically a movie or a show that is just like,
I'm so glad you asked. And I haven't had this since Friends, because Friends was something I watched on repeat. I had season 3 on VHS. And when I was in college, I was lonely. I was scared. I was sad. I was having panic attacks. And I would just play it on loop in the background. And it made me feel less alone. And it made me feel happy. But since Friends, nothing's really done that for me. I mean, there's been really good TV, but nothing like to just have in the background to feel like a part of the family, until Ghosts. Now, I know that there's a US version coming out, because I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but you auditioned for it.
Yeah.
And I didn't at the time, like, I was just like, whatever, I don't know what it is. So I gave it a chance because, like, my agent was just like, can you make this treatment a little more BBC friendly? And so I was like, what's a BBC sitcom like? And I was watching it with a very closed mind. And I was just like, this is so stupid. And the jokes are so blah. And then, but it Adobe Flash Player needs to not remind me at this very moment. But basically, like, it took me like a half an episode until I was like fully in. And I was just like, I love it. I love this show. And then I watched all the seasons. And then I watched them again. And now I'm watching with Johnny. I could watch them over. I'm sad I don't have any more episodes to watch. I love it.
So are you, now that you've watched it going on 3 times, is it something that, like, you kind of half watch, or are you fully watching them?
No, I'm in. I half watched it the first time. Like, you know, I was into it. But then, like, you know, something would grab my attention and I'll just be on the phone while it was on. And then I loved it so much and it ended. And then I was like, I'm just going to watch it again. And then, like, I caught jokes I didn't catch the first time. And then, yeah, the third time I'm watching with Johnny and he points out things and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. So, yeah, it's a world that I wish I could have more of. I like it. And I already said that. Okay.
Because, like, it's comforting to you. What is it, like, the same way Friends was comforting to you? What is it? Is it just make you feel, you get, like, do you get it on some level? Does it make you feel less alone? Like, I feel
it makes me feel less alone, but, like, and it's kind of not based on Friends. It's obviously heavily influenced by Friends, but there's something about a group of friends who get along even when they don't get along. You know what I mean? Like, they might have conflicts, but in the end they all love each other and, like, they support each other.
Yeah.
There's something about that, like, New it's weirdly Girl is comforting. Like that. Oh, really? I never gave that show a shot.
Neither did I. I was like anti-New Girl. I was like, it looks dumb. I think I tried watching like half a first episode and I was like, this is stupid. And then I stayed with my friend Amanda and she loved it. And so we would watch like an episode or two before bed. You know, when somebody else is just like, this is my routine and you're here now. So we're doing it together. Okay. And I loved it. Like, and of course I'm watching middle of the season, you know, when everybody is like, everybody's at peak. I understand what this show is about, Nis. And I was like, oh, this is really funny. And this is really good writing. So of course, after I left, I started from the beginning and I had more leniency to it not being perfect because I knew it got better. And I was already invested in the characters because I watched it from the middle and I fell in love with it. I was like, this is great. But what I noticed is they would, exactly what you said, it would be a bunch of conflict, but at the end they would do the right thing to take care of their friend. It was always like, oh, you're a dick. And why would you be like this? And we got to figure this out and we're in a mess. And then it'd be like, we got to fix, Jess is crazy. Or like, oh, Nick, he needs something done. Like everybody comes together and solves the problem as like a family. And I was like, oh, I see why I'm addicted to this.
It's nice. It makes you feel like you have a group of friends or something. And maybe just me, I'm very simple, but it makes me feel less alone. It's a world I want to be a part of. Yeah, I like couldn't wait to like have dinner and sit down and watch an episode or 5.
Okay. I would say 30 Rock is my, like, I was having a panic attack yesterday and my friend Adrian's like, you want to watch 30 Rock? 30 Rock would help you. And I was like, it's a great idea. Like, she had to convince me, like, she had to remind me of the thing that I usually do when I'm like scared or having a panic attack or sad. And so as soon as I put it on, it was like, truly like having like a pacifier. I was like, I just get so taken in by like the relationships and just like the writing is so good.
It's the writing is so good. Yeah.
So I'm in the middle of like having a panic attack and I'm rewinding because I'm like, so well timed, so well said. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I just get really dorky in both. I enjoy the show, but then also as an artist, it makes me excited and takes me out of it. But I've probably, I don't know, before that, I think it was maybe Seinfeld and South Park. I used to watch those over and over again when I was in college.
I watched a lot of Seinfeld, and they're a group of friends who I guess love each other, but I don't know if they actually do. You know, they are so in conflict and that's funny, but it doesn't have that. There's not like that warmth. But I will, like Seinfeld used to be a source of comfort for me too.
I think it's both it being funny, and I think that's the way that we want to be talked to, is in that jokey, sarcastic, funny. But then also it's also being like, you're never alone, you have a group of friends. Like that's really what it, but there must be something, and I don't like family shows. Like you can almost let you know where your values are, because like family shows are like family. Doesn't matter if we're in conflict, we'll always be there for each other. And any show that's like friend based is like, we're in
conflict. You know, Rick and Morty was he was convinced to make them a family, because otherwise it was just going to be mad. So he was like, make it a family unit.
But I think that's where most shows go. It's either a family unit and it's like, we're a family no matter what, or it's a friend unit and it's like, we're a friend family no matter what, and you have to like pick a side. Like, are you
well, I think like both of us are obviously we're still our family is our friends. We're still in that point in our lives, and I think those shows kind of came up when the time between like post university, pre family was getting longer and longer and longer for most people, and you were spending more and more time with your friends. But like eventually most people get married, have kids, and settle down and become the family anyway. But you and I, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Ever. No.
I just take a picture of my family and I put it down. I'm just like, no, that's actually a really bad.
Why does Aunt Maria hate us? You ruined my family. That's why,
yeah,
bitch.
Yeah. I'm just like, she doesn't hate you. She just feels like you replaced. And then you look over and you're giving like daggers to a 2-year-old. I'm just like, no, she's nice. Look, you guys will get along someday. That's a really valid point. I didn't even think about that this is, we haven't crossed over into like family values.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah. Well, really, that's what it makes me, I'm genuinely worried about, you know, how I'm doing Zoom Diner, or I will have already done Zoom Diner. It's just like, I don't know how to live this next decade of my life, because I feel like I'm too old for the like complaining about flatmates, and dating material, but I don't have like kids material. So I don't have that, I'm just sort of in between, like, I don't, who do I relate to, you know?
Yeah, no, and I get that. That's why I actually appreciate the kind of comedy we do, though, which is that you can just, like, it isn't, life isn't just friends and family. Like, though, I think the world makes you feel that way, but, and they want you to feel that way, and they basically tell you these are the most, because it's like a friends, it's like a family sandwich, you're a family unit. Then you go off and you make friends and you date and whatever, and then you're a family unit again. But I do think there's something to be said about in that middle period that we're in and other people are in, you're not, is it your work that's more valuable? Is it your alone time that's more valuable? Is it the weird thoughts that you have? Is it understanding, you know, what your passions are? Like, there's this getting to know yourself and getting back to yourself if you had left yourself, and awakening that is beyond just dating, sex, and family, kids, husband, wife garbage. And I think that's where we're in. And that's, I'm enjoying being there. Like, there's a part of me that my stand-up is getting weirder and weirder. Like, I have a 2-minute joke about hating math and how much that affected me. I have jokes about ghosts because I have really strong opinions about them, but like, there is something that like, if I had 2 kids, why am I spending 5 minutes talking about ghosts? You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. This is my favorite period of one's life that they don't have to pick a side.
Yeah.
And those things are overdone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a real pet peeve of mine, saying a premise is overdone.
No, I that's a valid point. I would say that's a valid point because I think every premise is overdone and it's all about perspective. And I agree with that. But nobody's like, we don't have any good jokes about kids out there.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely doesn't need added to, but I think like, you know, Greg Giraldo is a great example of talking about shit that like everyone talked about, just like well-trotted premises. Like he could make a joke about airplane food I've never heard before.
Yeah, I completely agree. No, I completely agree. I think every topic's been overdone, but it's all about the perspective you have. But this new adulting, this period that's ever pulled out. I don't know. I like it.
All right. Well, your excitement's making me happy.
Okay. You want to get into the topic?
Yep.
Our topic is for Valentine's Day week. Is love real? We're like, how do we talk about this in a sciencey health way?
Yeah. Not at all bitter. Is love even real?
Yeah. And then if we had rights to any songs, I have to say, can I just say how angry I was that like, you know, I start with the Googler, I start Googling stuff. And I got this Psychology Today article that I was like first reading and then skimming. The whole fucking thing was them quoting lyrics as a way to justify that love is real. And I was like, hey man, this is the most fluffy garbage. It made me so angry that it was like, your Psychology Today, did you just quote like Rihanna lyrics? What are we doing here?
Psychology Today is one of those blogs that like anyone, like they need content. So they let anyone write for them. Is that?
No, I wouldn't say that. They have a lot of science and stuff in there. There are like a bunch of opinion pieces and stuff like that. And I don't have a problem with that, but like it took, I Wired magazine had more science in it than this fucking Psychology Today. It was just all literally quoting love songs of the past, like 50 years. And I was like, that is not research.
That's exactly what we're trying to disprove. It's like, that love is not love. That's like, that's the shit you're addicted to, that hit of oxytocin or whatever that happens. Yeah. That's not love.
I don't even know what this
that's love.
So basically scientists agree that love cannot be controlled, curated, switched on and off, that it arises from like a deep subconscious, and that it's like a basic drive. So like the really scientific-y, like sad way of saying it, but I actually appreciate it, was it's a basic drive evolved millions of years ago in order to enable us and focus our attention on just one partner so that we can start the mating process. That's all it is. It's basically fucking pick a person, make something, figure it out. Love is like, it's a natural high, clearly, and it's very much real. But from everything that I can kind of see, depending on who you're with, it can last for a long time. And if not, it's very fickle. Like it's there, you have it. And then when it starts to fade, you start to see all the kind of caveats and things you overlooked in a person. But if you actually do pick the right person, then it can actually last for a long time. So it's just this kind of double-edged sword of love is real, but if you fall in love with the wrong person, when the shininess falls away, it's gonna not be maintainable. Or if you fall in love with the right person, it can last for years, and they've done studies.
I always feel like it's like perfume. Like you might put on some perfume and then smell it and be like, I like the way that smells. But after a couple hours, you're like, I fucking hate this.
Yeah.
Or after a couple hours, you might be like, I really love this. But initially, it's always sort of nice.
Or after a couple hours, it's gone. And you're just like, did I sweat it off? Is this like, what the fuck is this? It was just
perfume
here.
Ghosted me.
I got perfume ghosted. I think that's the thing that everybody struggles with, is that like, we do see it change and we do see it evolve. And that's scary. But like, if you're with the right person, can you work with that evolving of love? And like, there's a lot of talk about how it turns into love turns into commitment, and commitment, or like companionship, I think is the better word, that love go like the sharp excitement of love can mutate into companionship and connection. But if you don't have that companionship and connection up front, it seems like love is a finite thing that disappears over time, as opposed to if you have the companionship and connection, when that kind of intense love starts to wane a little bit, it can still kind of go on.
Okay. So are you saying that most couples, like when you start out, you will get along and everything will be great and like you'll get the butterflies and you'll feel really good and you're happy. And then you're like kind of like whistling to get coffee and giving homeless people money and everything is just sort of, but then that'll fall away. How long does that last? That lasts like what, like a year, 9 months?
It seems like people believe it lasts around 2 years. I don't know where the science is for that, but that seems to be this weird number that they're like, it can last up to 2 years.
All right.
Which has always made me very, and I feel like I've known that for a long time. So it always makes me really weary when somebody gets engaged really early. Like we've talked in a previous episode, how you guys, your past relationship, you got engaged after 6 months, but like getting engaged in the honeymoon period and in the like maximum love period, I'm always like, what's the rush, guys? Like, don't you want to find out how you feel after that goes away?
Yeah, but what's exciting about that? Nothing. Let's get married and fuck it all up.
Yeah. Everybody loves paperwork and moving. Don't you feel like there's certain moments that like every, you know, if a relationship's going to go forward or not, like 3 months is kind of when you decide if this is going to be a real relationship or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody seems to have that, like, to the point where like for a while I couldn't get past the 3 month mark. And then as I got older, I was like, oh yeah, because there's so many issues with showing up and being connected and all this stuff that just wasn't there. You can only really tolerate it for a couple of months. Then there's that kind of year mark of, is this really turning into something serious? And then the 2, 3, 4, whatever that is, where decisions start to get made. And then they talk about the 7 year itch if you've been together or married. And then whatever, I've never made it to 7 years, so I don't fucking know. But I do find that there's over and over again in books and music and literature and talking to friends and everything that everybody kind of knows those walls of going to the next level in a relationship.
My friend Jimmy said, I'm going to fuck up his, like, because this was years ago, but basically some relationships like will only go so far, like a train on a stunted track. It's like, it's only going to go so far. And then some relationships you can see just going the whole way to your destination. I swear to God, I explained it so much better. Every relationship has a link.
A stop.
Yeah.
That they get off at.
And the woman he's currently married to is, you know, he told me, he's like, with her, I can see it going all the way. And
yeah,
which is sweet because they got married and had kids together. So,
aww.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, I think that can be said with friendships and otherwise, that there's people grow, people change, and you can't penalize people for that. Like, why would you want somebody to stay stagnant and pretend like their experiences don't evolve them or change them? You know, I have more examples of that with like friendships and what have you, but even in relationships, you can kind of see like, oh, this isn't just enamored, or this isn't just excited to be seen, or this isn't just something new and I'm excited. This is real connection. I think I've always been pretty bitter about long-term relationships, marriage, what is really connecting with somebody, that like, I think both as a woman, I'm, you know, love is something that I think it's like shoved down our throats that's how you get value. But like what love is very different between everybody. And I think you kind of find that out that as you get older, everybody's definition of love is different. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
What does that mean? But like, there is something about love that's like clearly attractive, but also the scariest drug. And like so much less warning goes into how a relationship can knock you down so hard and just make you feel like nothing, as opposed to like, we tell kids like, don't mess with drugs. You know, what comes up must come down.
I wish parents raised their kids to be like, watch out for the drug of love. Like, watch out for that, because it's really dangerous. Instead of like, especially to girls, like, you better find someone or you're going to end up an old maid and, you know, you'll get too old. No one will want you ever again. But like, I would love it if it was not recommended to fall in love. And then it's like, if you do fall in love, make sure it's done with precaution and
like it's a pack of cigarettes. Some love might cause disassociation, a way of backing away from all obligations, complete depression and lack of self-esteem. And you're like, oh, that's a lot of side effects. I don't know if I want to take this. I both think it was an important thing that my dad said, but also I think a scarring thing that my dad said, which is don't marry the wrong person. My dad said that so much to me as examples of people in his own life that he felt he was no longer in a good relationship with because of their wife or husband, like somebody that like he feels like that person hurt them. And then it made it so they didn't want to connect with anybody and it ruined their friendship. But also I, you know, I don't think my parents are the happiest. And my dad also saw things in this like 50s, we're going to have a white picket fence and we're all going to go to church on Sunday. And the world has just changed so much since my dad was younger that I think he just had so many expectations and it was so like rigid and there was no way for us to fit into that. And so he's just kind of like, me and my dad had like a legit gut laugh. I think we said it on one of the episodes where he was basically like, I don't know if, you know, your brothers are going to like get married and have kids. And I was like, why does that make them a failure? Who wants that? He's like, yeah, I did it. And it wasn't that great. And I was like, see, and we just started gut laughing. Yeah. But like, there's a part of me that's like, my dad still thinks that if I'm not married and I don't have kids, that my life is less valued. And he feels that way both about his sons as well.
My dad feels the same, but like, I don't know about less valued, but I think he wants me to feel, I think he wants to feel like I'm taken care of.
I think that's where my dad feels too. But I think there's another side of it of back to like the male depression stuff that we would be considered less than, considered an outcast, considered freaks by not going the cliche typical route of marriage, kids, what have you. And
yeah, and I think all of our parents are kind of disillusioned into thinking that was the way to go. And like there wasn't, our world opened up so much with the internet and it just wasn't around when our parents were 20 or 24 or however old they were when they got married. And it's just options changed. Like you can meet anybody at any point in the world, just at your fingertips. Relationships changed, the nature of the way people connect, the way, nature of communities changed. So it's not like you get married and that's a small family unit, but that's your family unit. Like you might have a community of friends and that's your family unit. And you know, and like you're able to meet more people. It's just, it's so different now that that model is so out of date. And my parents were an arranged marriage. And so like within their culture, it was normal for them because of similar religious and economic backgrounds. It was normal for them to just get married. So like my dad was in America. He wanted to get married. My mom wanted to move to America. They were the same religion. It's all part of the same community. So my dad like met her and they talked for a few days and then they got married. But they didn't date for 7 years first and figure out if like there was no like rush of chemicals. I mean, I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe there was, but it's just one of those things when you talk to like people who have arranged parents who had arranged marriages. And it's one of those things where you just have to find the love. And it's like, I'm sorry. I feel like I've babbled so much, but there's so much I want to say about options and how options fucked everything up. And like, but when you remove the options, then you have to make it work. And that might be love or might not be love. Like my parents never got along. But now that they're in their 70s, never. And like, I remember moving, I fleed it. And I remember moving and my dad calling me up like, yeah, I just had lunch with your mom. And I'm like, in what world do you do that? Like, well, if you guys are going to get along, why am I running all over the world? I just think in retirement, in their 70s, as their health deteriorates, they find solace in each other and they do find, like they do love each other and there is that support there. But when we say is love real, are we talking about the fantasy of the fairy tale? Or are we talking about what grows out of a partnership over the years?
Well, in my mind, it's the actual like emotions and chemical response. Like I do think, you know, romantic comedies, I think just magazines, I think society in general, how people talk, I think all that stuff causes you to have these unrealistic expectations as of both people and how you're supposed to feel about people. I do think the emotion is real and I do think the connection is real, but I think how powerful the connection is a delusion. We are connected forever. We always understand, like it's a strong glue, but it's going to wear over time. Like it's going to need to be reconnected or add a little water so it sticks.
Do you know
again
what? Like Johnny's landlord fixed this thing in the shower by gluing the panel onto the wall and he was like, don't touch that. And I was like, what? I don't live here. But he doesn't know. And then he comes back with a brick and he puts the brick on that so that it can form and bond. Society is that brick. Yeah. My parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it was like, yeah, we like each other. And then society is just like, you gotta have babies and feed it forever. And you're like, what?
That's, I guess, so we have to bond. Yeah.
No, and I mean, perfect example of an arranged marriage in the sense that we have to bond, we have to figure it out. And in any kind of work project, when there's a pressure, you fucking hopefully figure it out. And I mean, there's tons of books and studies to show that doing it through feeling and gut is not good. Like it seems never work out. And when people stopped choosing mates due to community, family similarities, whatever the fuck that means, religious similarity, whatever it is, when they stopped using these kind of, I mean, I read a whole book on marriage years ago about what marriage had a purpose. Marriage was, you know what I mean? It was about collecting income. It was about,
it was like a business transaction.
Yeah, about bloodlines. That's why like women were traded for goats and shit. So I've always been like, marriage is stupid. I've gotten better. You know
Take
what I mean?
My daughter and my four donkeys. No? What about three more camels?
No? Let me see the camel's teeth. Let me, but it's this camel. And you're like, she also had braces. Shut up. Like, but like, I always have to separate marriage and love because I have a lot of negativity towards marriage. And it's, like I said, it's changed, it's grown. I'm not as anti-marriage as I once was, but love, I think in a lot of ways is like, I think it has value. I see it in my friendships. I see it in my family. I see it in the people I've dated. I know it's there, but when is it not to be trusted? Because I think that, I think what I've learned more is not that it's not real, but that it's not accurate and that it's, you know, those rose-colored glasses that everybody talks about, where like everything they do is special, everything they do is perfect, as opposed to when I look at the people that have been in my life for over 10, 15, 20 years. Again, I know it's different when you're having sex with somebody and you're spending more time with them, but in general, me and my friends have grown so much over the course of 10, 15, 20 years. How has that still been a loving relationship when we have changed so much as people, and what had to be accepted, negotiated, compromised so that we're still a friendship unit? And I think women in general have navigated that really well in their friendships, because like we kind of even said in the male depression episode, we're raised to be more vulnerable, more open, be more kind of honest about our feelings. But then when you start to bring a partner into the group, you know, whatever sex, doesn't really matter, all of a sudden you have to like renegotiate your values in a more stringent way than you would in a friendship. And then it just seems like it flies off course.
Like most societies, divorce was or is a bad thing. And I think in Western society, like it became more normal after the 80s to get a divorce. But like my parents, like divorce is out of the question unless you're being beaten. I just wonder why society has to be that brick for people. And what was so wrong with I think it might've been Louis C.K., but like checking in every 7 years and being like, do you still want to do this? I still want to do this. Let's keep doing it. Like what would be wrong with that?
I actually think that's super positive. And like, even in my past relationship, we had a running joke that like, it was in June for some reason, but like, we would just kind of check in and be like, it was like, it's like weirdly an anti-anniversary, like do you want to re-up your submission. What is it like when you have a data plan, like you're every 2 years, you have to be like, yeah, I still want to be with you, AT&T. Yeah. Like we kind of had this joke and every year we would like joke about it. And I liked it. Like it was kind of helpful. And it was actually kind of mentally helpful when I was ending things to be like, oh, that's not funny to me anymore. I don't want to re-up this. It was like a little bit of an awakening where I used to make these cute little cards and be silly about it. And
but then isn't it such a better mindset rather than congrats to us for making it this long? Wow. To switching it to like,
I want to be here.
I still want to be here. Do you want to be here? Great. Instead of like, holy shit.
Yeah. And also I think you check like the same way that like, if it is AT&T, you go, actually, you've dropped all my calls. You know, I never seem to, my text message never seemed to go through. I'm going to find a better data plan, a better service because I'm not getting the value out of it that I once did. And I don't know if you changed something, but this isn't working for me anymore. As opposed to, it's not working, but I'm going to fucking cram it in and make sure that on the outside, it looks like everything's peachy keen and that we're working together. I don't know if I talked about this, but my friend Dani, I've known her since elementary school. So longest friendship. She called me like 5 years ago and she's like, have I done anything to like hurt you or like you're upset about me with? And I was like, what? She goes, I had a friend tell me that I hurt her and we talked about it and I had no idea I was doing this and it made me really sad and I think we worked it out, but it just made me realize that I don't know if I've been doing that to other people. So I just wanted to check in. And I was like, oh no, we're good. And she's like, okay, well, let me know if we're not.
That's funny.
But it was like, so it was actually kind of enlightening and a kind of freeing that I was like, oh, sometimes it's hard to be like, you hurt my feelings. You know, it's really hard to like be open and honest about how somebody might've treated you or resentments you might've had. And I was like, I think we should keep doing this. Like we've been friends for over 20 years. I think in every couple of year, hey, have I pissed you off in any way? Are you upset with me? Should we be resolving? And it's different for us because we haven't lived in the same state in 15 years or whatever. So I would think somebody like me and you who talk every day, we might need to be like once a week, just make sure we're okay. Like nobody, no resentments have built. My old manager actually, when I like gave me really great advice that she does with her and her husband, which is at the end of the day, they just take 3 minutes to be like, is anything you want to talk about? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, that's really nice.
And like, literally, I think it's the end of each week. I don't think it's every day, but like at the end of each week, like before they go to bed, they take like 5 minutes to be like, what happened this week that really made you feel special? And what happened this week that like, you just feel a little icky about, or, you know what I mean? And they kind of just like, so like, if it was like, oh, you did the dishes and it just, you could see that I was stressed and that was important. You just did it. And it meant a lot to me. Or, you know, I saw you were sad the other day and I didn't say anything and I felt really bad. And I just want to know that I cared. For some reason I couldn't show up for you. Like, I was like, oh fuck. I was like, that's so loving. Like that little check-in, it doesn't have to be, nothing gets built up and resentments don't build. And I was all of a sudden, I was just like, I want that marriage. I was like, I like that. Can I choose that marriage where you're able to talk about stuff before they turn into resentment? Should we end with a dumb fact?
Yes.
97% of mammals do not pair up to rear their young. 97%. We are of the, it's like us and like, are penguins mammals? I think they are.
I don't know. But yes, like I think they are. Oh, it's been so long since I've had a science class. That's sad. But I want to raise our young in villages. Like I want, like, not, you know, groups.
Yeah.
Tribes. Anyway, that's a good fact. Thank you for it.
I would love to do an episode on tribes. That's the kind of stuff that I love. Okay. We would love to hear, you know, if you believe love is real, what makes you feel like it is or isn't? What do you feel is something toxic in society that makes love seem inaccessible or you don't feel like is a part of the definition of love that makes it toxic? Like, I think that's, I don't know. There's something in that. But you can write to us at 2nondoctors. That's 2nondoctors@gmail.com. And we'll see you next week, guys.
See you next week. Bye.